welcome on behalf of the court the Hillsborough High School students who are here with the Supreme Court and State Bar Court with Class program, which has won two national awards. Under the program, students are invited to come to the hearings, and they are given materials before the oral arguments. And at lunchtime, they meet with a justice. And today, the justice is Justice Ann Walsh Gradley. And the Hillsborough High School students will be joined by Notre Dame High School students at noon. So those of you who are here right now should just stay, and Justice Bradley will be out to greet you and meet with you. So will the Hillsborough High School students please stand so we can see you? Well, welcome, and we hope you find this informative and interesting. Won't you please be seated? Now that we have met you, I would like to introduce the court to you. On my far left is Justice David Prosser. To his right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. To my immediate left is Justice William Babbage. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my right is Justice Donald Steinmetz. And to his right, Justice John Wilcox. And to the far right, Justice Patrick Crooks. With the introductions made, I will call the second case, which is the Wisconsin Department of Transportation versus Keith J. Peterson. Ms. Patak, you represent the state of Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. In order to maintain a well-established set of procedures affecting service under Chapter 32, the body of law governing eminent domain in this case, it is respectfully submitted that the Court of Appeals decision appealed from in this case must be reversed. The question presented is, does service of the notice of appeal to the Condemnation Commission on the state, does that affect service on the Department of Transportation, the condemning authority herein? The department respectfully submits that not only is there an absence of statutory authority to support the Cohen's or Keith Peterson's position that service on a state entity other than the state can be accomplished by serving the Attorney General, but also the Conrad case decided in 1958 provides affirmative support for the contrary position. The principles that grounded the Conrad decision remain fully in effect today. The state continues to exercise its powers of condemnation exclusively through its agencies. Section 32.02 continues to define those entities with condemning authority, and nowhere in that section is the state identified. Third, a case that reconfirmed the holding in Conrad years after Conrad was decided, that being Zinn versus State, continues to maintain, according to this court, that a condemnee must sue the state agency in order to effect service under Chapter 32. Fourth, the definition of person that has been so contested by the Cohens or Keith Peterson in this matter has never been redefined and says nothing to this court with respect to which party must be served with notice of the appeal under Section 32059. And fifth, the Holsworth rule, which establishes that consent to sue the state or one of its agencies cannot be found in a definitional statute, continues to control. The definition of persons that was raised by the Cohens does not tell this court anything about the identity of the party or the state agency condemning authority according to the legislative directive, which must be served with notice of appeal for four reasons. Both the cases of Conrad and Zinn decided by this court tells us to look to Section 3202 to determine which entities may exercise powers of condemnation, and thus those entities that may be sued. The legislature has determined that the state will only exercise its powers of condemning through its agencies, and the legislature alone, with all due respect, can change that. Second, the definition of persons cannot be effective in determining which entity must be served for this reason. Under Section 3202.10, for example, the statute defines a rural electric cooperative association as an entity that may exercise condemnatory powers. If we were to agree with the Cohens that the definition of person in 32011 controls the determination of which entity must be served, then a rural electric cooperative association would never have to be served if it condemned, because association is not listed in the definition of persons.
Counsel?
Yes.
I'd like to ask you a more broad-reaching question, first of all, because I always ask myself why we're here. And I presume that we're here, that you're here, because this is more than a technicality, as far as you're concerned. What difference does this make to the Department of Transportation? What is the harm done to the DOT if you're not served but the Attorney General is? Because I assume that, you know, there's communication between the Attorney General's office and the DOT, and that in terms of giving you notice of what's happening, they're going to let you know right away. What is the harm? Why are you here?
Your Honor, we're here because this court has held consistently, without fail, that prejudice is not the standard when determining whether service has been properly accomplished. Under this court's decision of 519 Corporation versus Department of Transportation that is cited in our brief, this court has stated that we recognized in that case that the corporation was apprised of the appeal within the time set by the statute and cannot claim it was harmed. And nonetheless, this court dismissed the appeal because the court stated that for the rules of statutory service to have any meaning at all, they must be strictly construed. And it's the department's position in this case, Your Honor, that for over 40 years, Conrad has set the standard that when you sue the state agency, as the legislature has so determined, you must serve that state agency. And service on the Attorney General is of no effect.
So you're telling me that you're here simply because it's the law, but there's no other policy behind it?
This is the policy, Your Honor. For there to be a uniform set of procedures governing condemnation in this state, these rules must be observed.
But if you look at it through the eyes of the Cohens, and you look at the condemnation document, and that document has State of Wisconsin written all over it. It starts off with award of damages by the State of Wisconsin. I mean, looking at it through their eye, and you know how many other references there are, a dozen maybe, to the state of Wisconsin. Looking at it through their eyes, doesn't it seem reasonable that the Attorney General be served?
Your Honor, not only does it not seem reasonable, but reasonable is not the standard. And let me return to the first point I just made. It doesn't seem reasonable because this court has consistently held that we look to Section 3202 to determine which entities may condemn, to determine which entities must be served. And the state is nowhere mentioned in Section 3202. Therefore, the language of the award itself cannot vary from the provisions of the legislature, nor can, with all due respect, this court vary the law in that regard. Secondly, it is...
But 3201 does refer to the state as a person.
Yes, Your Honor, but one of the problems that the Cohens are going to have to address in being consistent with that definition is this. There is no reference in Section 3201.1 to natural persons, and yet under 32059, which is entitled Appeals from Award by Owners and Other Parties to the Award, it would be possible, according to the Cohens, to not serve any other party to the award because natural persons are not defined as persons under 32011. And yet that's absurd when looked at looked at from the perspective of the entire statutory scheme. Therefore, rural electric cooperative associations, natural persons, the Department of Transportation, while not specifically referred to in the definition of persons, all must be served. Looked at from the vantage point of the entire statutory scheme, if we look at all of the service provisions in Chapter 32, and I could tick them off for the court, but it would probably waste the court's time, each of the statutes requires that the condemnor be served. Even 32059 requires two sentences after the sentence that's been so litigated in this case, that the condemnor will be provided with a notice of appeal from any other party in interest who wants to join in the appeal of the original appellant to the appeal. Therefore, for the whole statutory scheme to make any sense at all, the condemnor in this administrative procedure or the condemnor in a circuit court case that would be brought under a different provision of Chapter 32 is, of course, entitled to notice. And the DOT has been designated as the condemnor by the legislature and therefore is entitled to notice.
You know, counsel, we've had numerous cases over the years I've been on the court, and many before I was on the court, that dealt with who you serve for review, administrative review in the circuit court. And the statutes, so like this one, have language that points one way or the other. And we sort of, over a whole series of cases, just made a variety of decisions of who you serve. And are you familiar with those cases, the Department of Revenue cases? They are, I can't remember which agencies, but a whole set of agencies. And in those, at least in some of those cases, it was suggested to the department that they ought to say on the notice what the party should do if they want to complain, and tell the parties who to serve and where to serve. Now, I looked at your notice, and you don't do any of that.
Your Honor, the award of damages here does not inform the Cohens who they should serve, but the statutes and the case law do. And the statutes and the case law have been consistently followed for over 40 years that the condemnor agency must be served.
Is it a question? Is the threshold question of, you know, what does the statute say? Is it ambiguous as to who should be served? Is that the threshold question? Or is the threshold question, has the state as state consented to be sued?
The threshold question here, Your Honor, is a part of the second question Your Honor just phrased. Has the state consented to be sued? But under Article 4, Section 27 of the Constitution, the Constitution provides that the legislature shall state in what courts and in what manner the state may be sued. And it is the department's position here that the manner in which the department, an arm of the state, may be sued in this case, in other words, being brought to the jurisdiction of the Condemnation Commission, is set forth in Chapter 32 and must be observed strictly.
I mean, it seems that this, you know, is the sovereign immunity argument, to me, seems the threshold question. Has the state as state consented to be sued? And then, I certainly may be wrong in this, once you answer that, if you say that, you know, yes, then you can talk about the ambiguity of the statute, but you don't get to the ambiguity of the statute until you do that threshold sovereign immunity question.
The sovereign immunity question is key here, Your Honor. The manner in which the state may be sued, or its agency, because sovereign immunity extends to its arms and its agencies under the cases cited in our briefs, the manner in which is the key question here. And if the manner is not observed, then personal jurisdiction, in this case, in terms of the Condemnation Commission, is not achieved over the person of the Department of Transportation.
What case makes it clear that it's the department that has to be served?
The Conrad case, Your Honor.
Okay. What part of it?
538.
Your Honor, at page 537, I cited at page 18 in the appellant's brief, where the court said, quote, it would not seem difficult to give directly to the commission any notice which a party wished to call to its attention. To deliver to the Attorney General such notices, which is all the plaintiffs did, does not seem to us to be compliance with the requirements of service of notice on the commission. In Chapter 32 today, the same statute that was construed in Conrad is now numbered Section 3210, and that section was construed in Zinn. In Zinn, the court reaffirmed the Conrad holding. And it's very important, I believe, in this context to note that the statute construed in Zinn tells the petitioner that you must serve the person who has occupied your land under Chapter 3210 that is in effect today. Thus, today, if an owner were to bring an inverse condemnation action against a state agency, then that owner must serve the person of that state agency and not look to 3201 for a definition of which person it is, but rather go directly to the condemnor with the notice.
But Conrad spoke to the issue of giving notice of the filing of a condemnation petition. It had nothing to do, as I understand it, with appealing an award of damages to a county condemnation board, which gets to the larger point that the Court of Appeals was making, which was that Chapter 32 has been dramatically changed since then.
The five essential fundamental principles that grounded the decision in Conrad have not changed, Your Honor. And those were the five that I ticked off earlier, including and perhaps predominantly that the state continues to exercise its powers of condemnation through its agencies and not as the state. And therefore, it is the state agency that must be served. There is no exception to the rule that when a state agency must be served, service may be on the Attorney General that I am aware of under Wisconsin law. The Keith Peterson case in the Court of Appeals is the first exception to that rule. And it is inconsistent with the remaining body of law construing the entire Chapter 32. One of the other arguments that the Cohens have suggested in their brief is that the Attorney General might be served because it is the presumptive attorney. And the case of In the Matter of Petition of Electric Power Company, 110 Wis Second at 657, addresses that issue and says that in a condemnation proceeding, service on the presumptive attorney of the condemnor does not affect service on the condemnor.
That's it?
That's simple. Thank you, Your Honor.
And you objected in a timely manner, counsel?
Yes, Your Honor. We brought a writ of probe. Circuit Judge Lucci had already assigned the matter to the Condemnation Commission prior to the Attorney General's service with the notice. And at that point, the department brought a writ of prohibition to prohibit the commission from hearing the appeal. That was the first appearance, if you will, of the department in the action, objecting to the commission's appearance hearing.
But if you prevail, I take it that the time is passed for the Cohens to serve you.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Did you wait until the time had passed?
I do not recall specifically, Your Honor.
We can check the record. Thank you, counsel.
Tell me.
What
was the condemnation for?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What was the condemnation for?
It was for a portion of the Cohen's property.
What kind of property was it?
I believe the petitioner could answer that more accurately than I could, Your Honor.
For transportation or highway purposes?
It was for highway purposes, correct.
Okay, counsel. Thank you, counsel. You will have 5 minutes rebuttal. Counsel representing Henry and Edith Cohen and the Harbor Mall Properties Limited Partnership. How do you pronounce your name, sir? Okay, Mr. Kanowit.
Thank you. Once again, I am Bob Kanowit, and I represent the intervening respondents in this case, Henry and Edith Cohen, and their partnership, Harbor Mall Properties Limited Partnership. I do not represent Mr. Peterson, who is the named respondent, but he is the chairman of the Local Condemnation Commission and is not making an appearance here today. I think the court will agree that we're the real party in interest, and so it's probably more appropriate that I argue this rather than Mr. Peterson. Just in response to Justice Babich's question about whether the department did wait until the time had expired before they sought their writ of prohibition, and examination of the record will reveal that they did. At the time that that they were served, there was still some time remaining. The department waited and then brought this writ of prohibition a number of months later after that time had expired. In response to Justice Prosser's question about the property, this was some commercial property owned by Mr. the Cohens and their partnership, and it was some development property on Tower Avenue in Superior, Wisconsin, which I don't know if you're familiar with Superior, but it's the main drag through Superior and is currently being developed quite heavily right now. The department acquired some property there to widen Tower Avenue, and the process of doing that took a substantial amount of the Cohen's property. Justice Bradley raised an issue about state sovereignty during the petitioner's argument, the appellant's argument, I'm sorry, and that the state is sovereign and that such sovereignty is necessary here in a civilized society is hard to argue with. But there is a more fundamental right at stake in this case than state sovereignty. One even more important to the functioning of our democracy, and that's the fundamental right of individuals to just compensation for property taken for public use, which is guaranteed, as the court is well aware, by the United States and the Wisconsin constitutions, and that right was specifically acknowledged by this court in the Kinkle versus Kenosha County case. Was also further acknowledged by this court in one of the cases that the appellant cites, that's the Zinn versus State case. And in that case, interestingly, the court found that even though the appellants did not comply with the procedures set forth in Chapter 32 to appeal a condemnation award, that they still had an inherent right under the federal constitution to sue the state, to go after the state for compensation, simply because that right is guaranteed in the federal constitution. So I think that's the more important right that the court has to consider here today. Not the state sovereignty right, but that fundamental right to just compensation. Does that, which is the more important right, which is the more paramount right? In order to ensure that such a fundamental right is protected and respected, principles of due process must be adhered to and applied in any proceeding concerning the justice of the compensation received. Those principles include notice and an opportunity to be heard before a competent tribunal. And in an orderly proceeding which is adapted to the nature of the case and in accord with established rules that don't violate fundamental rights.
Counsel, the argument that you make that there's a fundamental right to just compensation that overshadows, if you will, any kind of sovereign immunity or limitation by the sovereignty certainly resonates. I mean, that's a good argument. But what comes to mind is, for instance, we've got all sorts of statutes that deal with sovereign immunity or limitation. Real easy one, the limitation on personal injury awards against the state. I forget the amount right now. Is it $100,000 or $250,000? And someone can very well argue, well, I have a right to just compensation and I'm really injured and it's $1 million. But we uphold that limitation all the time. How does that affect your argument that a fundamental right to just compensation supersedes any sovereign immunity or limitation of liability?
Well, the state certainly has the right to regulate how compensation is received. That's also clear from the decisions of this court and the United States Supreme Court. States can go ahead and regulate that manner. The problem in this case is when the legislature went out to do that and regulate the manner in which someone can come and appeal the state's determination of what the land was worth, they did that in an ambiguous manner. And by doing that in an ambiguous manner, they're depriving the property owner of that fundamental right to just compensation.
So there's no problem with sovereign immunity trumping this fundamental right to just compensation as long as the procedure is clear and unambiguous.
I agree with that, yes. And that's exactly our position here, Your Honor, is that this statutory scheme, these statutes read together, are extremely, extremely ambiguous. And evidence of that is the number of cases cited in the state's or the Department of Transportation's brief. This isn't the only case where something like this has happened and then has to be a decision made about whether service was valid or not. There's all these cases, and I presume that's maybe one of the reasons the court decided to accept this case for review, is that there's this uncertainty out there. That's the very definition of ambiguity, is that persons similarly situated are having the same problem with this statute. Another very important principle that I think the court should consider in making its decision is when you have an ambiguity like that, with a procedural condemnation statute, this court has previously stated that procedural condemnation statutes, specifically these types of statutes we're talking about here today, being in derogation of the common law fundamental right to just compensation, are to be strictly construed. And the appellant even cites that proposition numerous times in their brief. But what I think that they forget is that they're to be strictly construed against who? They're to be strictly construed against the condemnor, not the person applying for condemnation. And I always wondered about that. I always wondered, you know, what this strict construction, which way is it supposed to go? I thought it should go against the condemnor. And I think a real good authority, and probably the eminent authority in this country on condemnation, is Nichols. Nichols on eminent domain. So I went to Nichols. And in fact, that's what Nichols says. Nichols is right on point in saying that procedural condemnation statutes, being in derogation of the common law, are to be strictly construed against the condemnor. That's at Nichols, section 24.06, subdivision 3. If you construe this statutory scheme against the condemnor here, then it's clear that service was mandated to be not on the agency, but on the state. The statutory scheme says, serve persons who are parties to the award. What persons are parties to the award? Well, let's look at what the award says. The state, not the State Department of Transportation. Numerous times, the state.
But when you read that award in light of Conrad, and I think the Zinn case, that was the 83 case that again discussed and approved the language in Conrad, that language essentially being that under 3210, since the state, as I understand it, since the state is not listed as a condemnor, you can't serve them. And that's what Conrad said, that's what Zinn said. How do you distinguish Zinn?
Well, really what you meant, and Zinn and Conrad, I'll distinguish them both if Your Honor doesn't mind. Conrad didn't say, you've served a condemnor. That's the position that the state takes now. Conrad said, you serve, the statute at the time of Conrad said, you serve all persons interested. And then the court said, well, this conservation commission, which is physically occupying this person's land, is certainly a person interested, such that it wouldn't seem difficult for that person to give notice to this conservation commission. The problem with relying on Conrad, and as the Court of Appeals held, is that statutory scheme has been completely redone since the time of Conrad. And now the statute says you don't serve all persons interested. You serve persons who are parties to the award. Now that to me is ambiguous. Persons who are parties to the award, particularly in light of this award of damages and language in it.
But the definition of person, although there have been changes in the code or in the statute, the definition of person has never changed. So your opposing counsel would say, okay, there are changes, but not in relevant part.
Well, but the relevant part, Your Honor, isn't the definition of person, but the portion of the service statute, 32.05, which says, who do we serve? At the time of Conrad, it says, you serve all interested. So it doesn't make sense to look to the definition of person in 3201.
You serve all interested what?
All interested. That's all it says. You serve all interested. Now the statute says, you serve persons. So any person looking at that says, well, I have to serve persons. I'm looking at this award. I can't tell which person to serve. What should I do? Well, Ellen says Chapter 32 furnishes a complete and exclusive remedy for anyone wanting to appeal the amount of their compensation. Well, let's stay within Chapter 32. Let's look and see if Chapter 32 gives us any guidance at all about what a person is for service. And if you do that, you determine that, well, a person is the state, but it's not a state department. It's not in there.
Well, but it says includes. It's not an exclusive definition.
But it goes to such great pains to enumerate what persons are. I think that the leaving the department out or leaving the department out as person included in there is evidence that the department wasn't intended to be included as a person. And maybe that was an oversight by the legislature. But that's something that the legislature can easily correct. And I don't think it's fair to deprive the Cohens of their fundamental right to just compensation just because the legislature enacted this ambiguous statute.
Well, what would make better sense? And you one assumes the legislature adopted laws that make better sense. What makes better sense? Is it better sense to serve the Department of Transportation, whose, I assume, employees have been involved and know about the case? Or is it better to serve the Attorney General's office, which has hundreds of lawyers and other employees and really has may not have had anything to do with the case, right? So who's
up to that point, that's true.
Right.
In the course of, as Your Honor well knows, in the course of handling a case like this, you don't just deal with one person from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. You deal with the local person that's responsible for the project. You deal with the district transportation director. In a big case, you might deal directly with the secretary. Which one of those parties do you serve? On the other hand, in looking at whether to serve the attorney general, you've got one person there statutorily authorized to accept service on behalf of the state. To me, that's more of a sure thing to serve that one statutorily authorized person. Then rather than take a shotgun approach and try and serve every possible person within the Wisconsin Department of Transportation and hope that one of those people is the authorized person in their eyes to accept service.
Well, who handles the state's case at this proceeding after this appeal is taken?
The Attorney General's office, the party we served. That's correct.
They handle it, not the Department of Transportation.
That's
Department
correct.
Of Transportation has lawyers, right? They don't handle this matter?
I don't know if the Wisconsin Department of Transportation has lawyers, but I think counsel will acknowledge that she's an employee of the Wisconsin Department of Justice. I believe she's an assistant attorney general.
Well, and who handled it at the Court of Appeals?
Same, but counsel who will catch her today.
Charles Larson is also an assistant attorney general?
As far as I know, he is, yes.
And then who handled it at the, I'm sorry, I keep forgetting what the name of it is, because it goes, the circuit court sends it to whom?
The circuit court makes an order of assignment to the local condemnation commission.
And who handles the case before the condemnation commission?
We never got that far, Your Honor, because before the condemnation commissioner could schedule a hearing, the department requested this writ of prohibition, so we never got there.
So the Department of Transportation objected or the Attorney General's office objected?
The Attorney General's office, or the Department of Transportation by its attorneys, the Attorney General's office objected.
That's
what I understand.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Do you have any further argument?
Well, I did have a couple. I see that I do have some more time.
Yes, you do. And my thank you was a response to the question, not inviting you to sit down. But you may sit down if you wish.
Okay, no, I do have some more. That's okay.
Could I ask you a question? What is the source of authority for the Department of Transportation to condemn the property? What's that?
I believe it's the Wisconsin Statute, Chapter 84, which provides that the Wisconsin Department of Revenue has condemnatory authority. I might be wrong. It might be Chapter 32. I think Chapter 32.02 defines the Department of Transportation as a condemnor. I don't have
the statute. This is 3202. The following departments, municipality boards may acquire by condemnation. Let's see.
Well, 3202 refers to the Department of Transportation in 15. Department of Transportation for the acquisition of abandoned rail and utility property under 8509. I'm kind of assuming, and maybe I'm wrong here because I haven't read it all, that you would look to 3205, condemnation for sewers and transportation facility. Well, maybe that's the wrong place.
Well, that's condemnation for sewers and transportation. This is what this is involved, right?
Yes, we never did contest that the department is the condemnor. The only issue in this case for us is, did we properly serve that condemnor by serving the state? As a result of the ambiguity.
I guess my point is, if you look at 3202, which is supposed to be who may condemn. It says Department of Transportation may condemn for acquisition of abandoned rail and utility property. So where does it say the Department of Transportation may condemn for transportation purposes? And is it referred to as Department of Transportation there?
Your Honor, I didn't recognize that as an issue in this case, so frankly, I did not look into it. I believe there is another portion of Chapter 32, or I think it's Chapter 84, which gives the department that condemnatory authority.
Is it 32.185, which condemnor means a displacing agency. In this section, displacing agency means any state agency, political subdivision of the state, etc., without setting forth specifically the Department of Transportation. I don't know if that's the answer.
Perhaps a counsel for appellant can shed some further light on that, but I believe the authority in the past was in Chapter 84 that granted authority to the State Highway Commission, and it might still be there. Does that answer your question, Your Honor? With regard to distinguishing the Zinn case, I didn't think I ever got to that, but the whole issue in Zinn was not whether the state can be, the Department of Transportation or any condemnor can be served by serving the state under this statutory scheme that we've been talking about. It's talking about whether you can sue the state directly. And in fact, the court found there that you could. They found that the right to just compensation was so fundamental that you had a cause of action directly against the state without regard to Chapter 32. Now, in that case, it's also true that the court did find that under Chapter 32, the property owner hadn't met the proper requirements there, so they couldn't maintain an action under Chapter 32. But they had a general claim under that fundamental right to just compensation to proceed directly against the state. With regard to the Holsworth case that's brought up by appellant, the Holsworth case, you remember, stated that definitional statute can't create consent to sue the state. We don't quarrel with that, but we're not asking the court to rule in that way in this case. We're not saying that this definitional statute, 3201, created consent to sue the state. We're saying that the the debt, the ambiguity in the interplay between that statute and the service statute 32.05(9) created an ambiguity such that you can serve the state and have that service be effective on the Department of Transportation. The Department of Transportation has consented to be sued by the enactment of Chapter 32. There's no question about that. This hypothetical that the appellant raised about a rural electric cooperative not coming in, not being included in the definition of person, well, who do you serve then if a rural electric cooperative condemns property? Well, my response to that is it wouldn't be reasonable, again, to look to Chapter 32 because a rural electric cooperative doesn't have any analog in the statute like the Department of Transportation has. The Department of Transportation, though, might be a distinct entity, is certainly an arm or a part of the state of Wisconsin. And so it's reasonable then to look at Chapter 32 and it says the state. Well, they must mean the Wisconsin Department of Transportation is served by serving the state. It would not be reasonable, dealing with a rural electric cooperative, to look to that list of entities in Chapter 3201 and say, oh, well, the state is a rural electric cooperative. It's just, there's no relation between the two, so I don't think that hypothetical has any bearing here in this case. My final point would be that there was some mention of, and I think it was the Chief Justice that mentioned these other cases, these Department of Revenue cases, other administrative type cases that the court has ruled upon in the past, where the question was, who do you serve to obtain review of a decision? Two of those cases have been cited by appellant, the Miller case and the Weissensel case. Miller case isn't one of those cases, I'm sorry. The Miller case was service on a state agent. But the Weissensel case is, I think, similar to what the Justice Abrahamson was talking about. In that case, you'll notice that the court said, well, you did comply with the service requirements of this notice of appeal or whatever it was in Weissensel. And so, therefore, we're going to take away your right to appeal. But look at the holding in Weissensel. In Weissensel, the court said, you have to serve an agency or an official. And then it went on at great length to identify what an agency or an official was. There's nothing in Weissensel, like in this case, that says serve a person, and then we're going to define person as the state, but then you can't serve the state. In Weissensel, it was very, very specific. And the person who was seeking appeal in Weissensel, for some reason, didn't follow those very specific and unambiguous instructions found right in the statutes as to how service should be accomplished. And the court took away the right to appeal. I don't think you have that here in this case. It's clearly an ambiguous statute. This court has held previously in the Kinkle versus Kenosha County case that the Court of Appeals relied on that the interplay of this definitional statute and the service scheme set forth in the service statute, the interplay of those two statutes is ambiguous. There really is no question about that. The appellant hasn't put any authority or made any argument to the court that this statutory service scheme is not ambiguous. I think they would have to acknowledge that it is. In light of that ambiguity, it's not fair to take away the Cohen's fundamental rights to just compensation under the federal constitution and the constitution of this state. That's all I have.
No further questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Knewitt. Counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. The statute is not ambiguous. When the statute is read in harmony with the other statutes in Chapter 32, it is clear that service on the condom nor, referred to in 32059, and service on the parties to the award all point to the Department of Transportation. The question came up where the Department of Transportation derives its powers to condemn property for highway purposes. That is in Chapter 84 under 84092, but also, as Justice Prosser pointed out, in Chapter 32 under 320215, and further under 32051, where the Secretary of Transportation is identified as one of the entities that may issue a relocation order, and under all of the case law constraint Chapter 32, the condemnation process is commenced by the issuance of a relocation order.
84091 also relates to condemnation, gives an express power.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Miller versus Smith case cited in the department's brief does stand for the proposition that you cannot serve the Attorney General to reach or effectively serve a state entity other than the state itself. You cannot serve the procedurally immune state in order to reach an agency of the state with respect to which the legislature has expressly permitted suit, and that is the Department of Transportation under Chapter 32. The Holdsworth rule remains in effect. The Holdsworth rule stands for the proposition that the definitional statute alone does not permit suit against the state. And here one must go to 32059, 32051, 32215, and in relation to that, 84091 and 2. Respondent here mischaracterizes Zinn. I would respectfully submit. The Zinn case stands for the proposition that under the twin constitutional mandates of Article 1, Section 13, which provides that just compensation shall be paid to owners when property is taken for public use, and Article 4, Section 27, providing that the legislature shall set forth the manner in which the courts in which the state may be sued, the dual mandate, this court said in Zinn, is met by the provisions of Chapter 32. And it is the provisions of Chapter 32 that are at issue here. The owner in this case was compensated. It was presented with an award of damages. The only question here is whether an appeal from that award of damages was perfected. And the answer this department would submit is it was not. Kinkle is inapposite for this reason. In Kinkle, the court was presented with this question, quote, whether Kenosha County was a party to the condemnation award within the meaning of Section 32059 so that service on the county was sufficient to give the court jurisdiction over the necessary parties. The question of sovereign immunity, of course, did not come up in that case, and therefore the case is inapposite, except I would suggest that the Kinkle or Kinsel Court was not far off the mark when it suggested that one looks to 32051 to determine who can issue a relocation order in order to identify which powers may condemn. And that statute has now been amended since Kinkle to include the Secretary of Transportation as one who may issue a relocation order. The court asked the respondent's attorney whether the condemnee was dealing with the Attorney General's office or the Department of Transportation in this matter. And throughout the statutorily mandated negotiation process, the owner dealt with the Department of Transportation District 8 office. Service on the Department of Transportation would have been easily understood by the owner who was dealing with the department throughout that long process of exchange of appraisal reports and the negotiation for the jurisdictional offer. The Chief Justice correctly pointed out that persons is not an all-inclusive list. It only includes certain identified bodies. My time is up. I will stop.
You may finish the sentence if you like. Maybe you have.
That's as far as I need to go.
Thank you very much. That concludes our second case for the month, or at least for the day, I should say. If the students would remain here, they will be joined by the Notre Dame High School students. And anyone else who wishes to participate may stay in the courtroom. And Justice Ann Walsh Bradley will be out momentarily. We are in recess till 1:45.